Welcome to episode 61 of Industry Misinterpretations with James Robertson, Michael Lucas Smith, Dave Buck, and Dave Thomas, our guest. This is a continuation of last week's conversation where we talked about Smalltalk's past, present, and future. If you have feedback on this or any other episode, please send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com, head on over to the Facebook group, Industry Misinterpretations, or head on over to iTunes and leave a review, or Podcast Alley and cast a vote.
To you about the things you've been putting me through now. I gotta talk to you, I gotta be explained to you. Hey, yeah.
Our management and our engineering practices, etc., are currently on a crusade to get more lean and agile, as you were talking earlier. Is there any kind of advice you could offer up to our management? And I'm sure this kind of extends out to people listening as well, that on this path, lots of things that you do straight up.
Well, I mean, the first thing is how big is the company?
Well, the Smalltalk division itself is not that large. I think, you know, you're talking in the neighborhood of 30 people total in terms of the technical area in Smalltalk here.
Right. So that's pretty easy, right? I mean, that's just N teams doing agile, assuming that you can decouple the pieces enough to do it, which is, of course, one of the problems is that Smalltalk is not nearly as componentized as we would like. But, I think it's pretty straightforward for companies like that. I mean, if you can decouple. So the biggest problem is decoupling, because if you want teams to go quickly, you need to be able to work within their own code base with relative speed and ease, and that they can independently test their component such that when the pieces come together, you don't get the big bang integration problems. In very large companies, I mean, typically the ones I see are, you know, hundreds or thousands of developers. There's just a lot of issues. I mean, one of them is aligning the company so they ship the kind of software, you know, the organization, you know, Fred Brooks's, you know. So one of the big things is often the company structure doesn't look like the product they want to ship. So aligning the structure with the product is very, very important. The other thing is working the incentive system such that you really are rewarding people based on predictability and quality, not on some other criteria. Another big issue is to have transparency. In a large company, most people don't know what's going on. And the more people don't know what's going on and have problems, the more they invent things like PMO, project management offices, and project managers. And basically, all those people come to help you because no one knows what's going on. So one of the key things in a large company is putting in what we call typically have called release engineering, which is basically making sure that you can get code base every build, find out what status of every artifact, and that way you have to have people running around asking you questions all the time and calling you to meetings to try and find those things out. So the most important thing in a large company is putting in the continuous build and metrics infrastructure. Because without that, you can never really know whether you're making progress. And then I guess the other big one is trying to partition things into components, because typically large software grows very, very quickly into a big tarball. In Smalltalk, I've always felt it was barely possible to maintain the tarball. But we still had a tarball. Ours was just a lot less sticky than the ones in C++ and Java. So we could barely survive in Smalltalk. Other people just can't survive.
I've actually used that description to describe a number of large customers I've been at where I've said that the only reason they're barely getting by is that they're using Smalltalk. They'd be failing a whole lot faster if they were using Java or C++. So actually, along the lines of what you were just talking about, though, when you talk about breaking things down into components, how do distributed teams play into that? Because we're getting a lot more distributed teams, people geographically dispersed, both across North America and across the planet. How do you think that plays into the whole integration of a team and getting continuous integration going?
Well, I think the experience that we've had, since fortunately we were always distributed, we actually didn't know that it wasn't supposed to work that way. So, you know, that's one of the benefits of not knowing, right? You know, the Seymour Cray hire them young, they don't know what can't be done. But I think the key component is that you have to interfaces present the ideal point for doing distribution, right? Because if you have something that's well contained, then you can actually send it to Australia or India or, you know, Eastern Europe or London or wherever, and they can become the owner and very proud for that component because they can maintain it to its interfaces. If you do that, today's technology, you can do distributed build, you can do builds around the world. There's both commercial and open source technology for doing regular builds. And if people really do test to their interfaces and give you code, then it's great. One of the problems, of course, is if frameworks are not components, and so frameworks get you some insidious couplings because people have to subclass inside the framework, and that gets you all sorts of nasty dependencies, which are, you know, we've heavily oversold frameworks and not stressed enough interface components. If you have components, it's pretty straightforward. Now, if you decide that you want to have split components across the world, that's a lot more entertaining. If you share the same mental space, it really doesn't matter where you're geographically located, right? And there's nothing worse than sharing an office with someone that's not in the, so that's a good deal worse than sharing, than working with someone, halfway around the world who thinks like you do.
So you don't think the geographic distribution is the biggest problem? The biggest problem is making sure that the people who are working on components are on the same page.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. But I mean, given my choice, I would relocate a component to a given site rather than trying to mix people inside the same component.
Oh, that's interesting. I haven't actually heard it expressed like that before.
Actually, at Small Talk Solutions, Joseph Pellegrin was talking about a project that he did where they had three teams across the world, and each one was working in an agile way. And at the end of each day, they'd hand off the whole project to the next team, 8 hours time zone difference away. And they'd pick it up and run with it and hand it off to the next team. He said it worked amazingly well, but I would imagine it would be rather tricky to do.
I've done that. We've done that for doing like prototypes and so on, but I think it's, it has to be very, very well understood and defined. I would not bet that would be stable for very long in my experience, but, anything is possible. If you have people who actually share values, you can do all sorts of things that defy other kinds of physics, right? Because these people just trust each other and want to work together, so they have this implicit contract between them about how they're going to work and share things. Because those are typically pretty small groups, and they typically are fairly unstable. So I just think it's a lot easier if you split the work over components. I mean, Eclipse does global builds, right? I mean, and it's based on the OTI model, so it's very component-oriented, right? The UI is done in Switzerland. The compilers are done, in France. The VMs are done in Ottawa. The UI machinery is done in Ottawa. The SWT stuff, the top end of the compiler integration stuff is one. So it's pretty, And they've been doing that for years, and the teams have actually moved from Minneapolis to Portland and split. Some of the people from doing the compiler moved back to France, and they basically divide the pieces up and allow each person to make progress. I mean, not without, in any area you sometimes have difficulty, and of course you have to ship the people every quarter too, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to move people around. There's got to be a basis of trust, right? So. You really want to have people who have lived in each other's labs. That's often easily done by hiring, you hire an Australian co-op and bring them to, the U.S. or Canada and a French co-op and people that understand how things work in the other lab and understand the people chemistry. And when they travel back, they tend to basically mediate the divergent views that people have.
Actually, that raises another kind of question in my mind about your experience when you went to IBM with OTI. OTI was a fairly small entity. How did that? What kind of culture shock did you get when you moved that small entity into IBM?
So the terms and conditions of the sale, we were very fortunate to work with. The acquisition was done by a very enlightened IBM executive, John Swenson, who's now the CEO of Computer Associates. And he's one of the most outstanding software executives I've ever met. And the arrangement with John was that basically OTI would be left intact as a separate company, and it actually ran as a separate business for 7 years after the acquisition. And instead of having OTI go into IBM, what happened is IBMers came into OTI. So OTI grew to about 400 from about, I don't know, 150 engineers as the whole Eclipse Visual Age for Java and Eclipse came out. So the culture was actually very much protected because it was a separate business. So it really was almost 10 years before people really felt the impact of being part of IBM. And it's still fairly well protected by lab directors and things like that. So
it's kind of a more gradual process, so you didn't get overwhelmed by the largeness of IBM.
Basically, the contract that we had said, you alone, you ship this stuff. And because OTI, fortunately, has a track record of shipping on time, which was somewhat different than some other groups at IBM, we basically, they've left it alone. And I think it's, obviously over time things change, people move, but it still functions pretty much independently of IBM. It has a well-defined, because it's componentized, that's allowed, for instance, the VM team now is actually in the WebSphere business unit, and the Eclipse guys are in the Rational business unit, along with the ObjectTime people who are also in Ottawa. Because they're componentized, those groups really have not been affected by the fact because they already, the VM are already in a separate team. So, they're in the same building, but they actually work, miles apart organizationally. But, the fact that they're componentized made their day-to-day life, per se, much different as a developer.
So I guess then from when you were obviously there when the Park Place Digitalk merger took place, I guess from your observation standpoint, it looked like something quite different was going on when Park Place and Digitalk tried to get together, even though they were much smaller entities.
Well, sure. I was actually a Digitalk stockholder, and I was actually pleased when the Park Place stock went up because I sold my Digitalk stock at a profit. That was basically a marriage of egos, and that never makes things healthy, from my perspective, right? In the sense it was get bigger and also there was this whole attitude that we want to go and get those OTI guys and things like that. In general, you need a positive culture, right? If your culture is, one of sort of greed and envy, then I think that's unhealthy, and I think it's just not what good technical people, thrive under.
No, that sounds reasonable to me. It was not fun to be part of that. I can tell you that from having been on the inside of it.
Oh no, and we knew all the personalities, so we wouldn't. It didn't actually, from our point of view, we thought it was actually quite convenient.
So I'm wondering here. You say you wouldn't want to use 30-year-old technology, right? Talking about small talk.
Let me clarify. I would not, if I was wanting to do something, if I was going to do something today and I wanted to do something with the same passion that I did small talk, however many years ago it was, almost 30, I think I would want to be, I would want to recognize the great strengths of small talk, but I would also want to recognize its weaknesses, plus the kind of computational ecology that I'm going forward in. So I would want to design something new and more, a better thing than I was able to copy from what the brilliant people at Parkpace had done.
So I was actually kind of hoping you would say something along those lines, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are on things like Croquet and Second Life. I mean, Second Life's essentially the largest Smalltalk image in the world, even though it's not actually Smalltalk. It does everything Smalltalk does, except it's one giant distributed cloud. And Croquet is sort of heading in that sort of direction as well, except more in a peer-to-peer sort of model.
Well, I guess I consider those sort of both applications. And, I guess it only looks like Smalltalk if you put on a Smalltalker's glasses, right? Could look like Lambda Mu. It could look like Lambda Mu if you knew about MUDs too, right? So,
yeah,
and so I think they're both really, really interesting, but they're kind of environments as opposed to languages, and they both show that the language doesn't have to be very good to be very successful.
Well, that's one of the things that I've been wondering about lately is this environments are taking over the world effectively on the web. Say, take Silverlight.net. Air with Apollo, Second Life with its three-dimensional programming environment. There are other examples like, oh, they've slipped my mind now. But it seems like, you know, you don't just build a programming language that creates Windows applications and Mac applications anymore. People are building whole that's what I was thinking of. It's like social network websites.
Things like Facebook and the open social thing that Google is doing.
It's almost like the deployment target of desktop applications as they have been for the last 20 years is the wrong thing to do now when people are making whole platforms to build applications on, because essentially they're sick of the operating system that they've been using for so long.
Well, yeah, but I think you're basically seeing people who have built a social networking thing and then realized it might be better if it was a platform. You have to look at the evolution of these things. The other thing is, if you want to design for the future, you never want to target what your competitors have already built.
Right. So if you're going after, if you were thinking you were going to go and be a Facebook competitor, just doing a Me Too is obviously not the way to go.
Right.
But doesn't that, that argument's kind of good if you then say, well, there's hardly anybody competing with Second Life, but there are dozens and dozens and dozens of languages trying to focus on desktop applications. You know,
Yeah, I think there's going to be lots of people competing with Second Life.
Yeah.
You just haven't seen them all yet, right?
Yeah, I know, but in terms of like the weight of what platform you want to deploy to in the desktop market.
Well, again, you have to choose what your target environment is for your new thing. And if I wanted to do a language, I think what your statement is saying, well, maybe the language doesn't matter. It's really the kind of environment that you target or the kind of market you target. And I don't disagree with you there. I was just saying that if I language, I wouldn't. I mean, I think Smalltalk's brilliant, and I still, we're still in use today and in use inside of Bidera. So it's not a case that it isn't still, an incredibly productive environment. However, there are a lot of things that have happened. Probably say if I was building, something that I would say this is worthy of being used, I think different in some respects, right? At least for me.
So I'm curious, just along those lines, what's in terms of what's right and what's wrong with Smalltalk, if you were going to just objectively look at Smalltalk and pick out some of the flaws that you think would be addressed in either a second generation of a third generation of it or something brand new, what would you identify as the biggest problems?
I think the openness of class libraries increases the surface area of the language to make it far too hard for many people to approach. So I believe that people are allowed to understand, so I really think it should be more componentized and that you should need a permit to go in and look at, it's good. If you need a collection, you should just be able to get a collection. If I want a collection that's super fast, super small, sideways and upside down, I really shouldn't have to, look at 10,000 of those in my browser when I just want to do something with a collection. A lot of the input will be hidden unless you need them. And you shouldn't be able to walk accidentally. You see subclass it, right? You should know that you're going into this scary dungeon with all these weird things going on. And, you should basically be aware that when you pass through that doorway that you're now working with sort of the implementation machinery, not with the others. So I really like the idea of mirrors, for example, to make it very clear when you're crossing a reflective boundary, or make it very clear when you're going inside a component. You're now changing from the user's hat to the implementer's hat. And I think there's a lot of stuff where you see the same thing in Ruby with people using reflective stuff. I mean, those programs that use all that reflective machinery can be really, really difficult for normal people to maintain. So I think you want a language that's much simpler. I think you want something that actually supports the functional roots of object oriented, that deals with functions at a first class, as first class entities, not sort of the bolt-on of blocks and things like that. Because we're in a world now where we can execute functional programs very, very quickly, and they give us a lot of chance for data parallelism and so on. And the Smalltalk kind of collection libraries and things like that are really weak compared to the kinds of things that one finds in good functional programming. So I would say, two things. One is more encapsulation of the implementation, and that also would allow people to optimize implementations a lot more if they wanted to, because everybody wouldn't be inside trying to subclass them. And another one is provide better support for what I would say is first-class functional programming.
Just one thing I wanted to interject there. It's interesting the way you said that about people getting lost between the implementation of user end and library end, if you will, because I've actually had an awful lot of people tell me at a much, I guess they were trying to grasp towards what you just said, that the first problem they often have when they open up a Smalltalk image is they're overwhelmed by the amount of stuff in it that they can't tell where their stuff ends and the system begins.
Yeah, I think you get this browser shock. I mean, you know, one of my ruder jokes most recently is the reason you need an IDE is because there's so many classes that, you know, you couldn't possibly learn the language just by sitting down and typing it in a text editor because there's just too much stuff.
I was going to say, you were at Uppsala 2007, I believe, on the panel for the No Silver Bullet, which interestingly is comes from a book that you, back in the 80s, you encouraged me to read, The Mythical Man Month. My question these days is there potential of a silver bullet coming up?
You should have seen the panel, Dave. We even had a werewolf on that panel. British werewolf.
Yes, an Americanized British werewolf. Yeah. Martin did a great job. I mean, for me, it was a privilege to be on a panel with Fred Brooks, as someone who's just a giant. I think the consensus is that we don't have a silver bullet. That we have niche. We have some areas where, you know, you can really make progress, but most of them tend to be kind of niche technologies where people do it. But on a wide spectrum basis, there's no evidence that there's any real sort of wide spectrum silver bullet.
Expected one.
Let me just go back to the previous thing for just a second, where you get browser shock and Smalltalk. If I look at things like .NET and Java, they do partition you more in their IDEs from the system stuff as opposed to your stuff, but the libraries are even huger than the Smalltalk ones. Do you see having the same problem in most of the modern systems that you just described for Smalltalk?
Oh, absolutely. They're worse. They... But the problem is we set the bad example and they bloated it, right? So,
that's a very interesting.
Look at people are using Model View Controller. I mean, Model View Controller we know should not exist. It was only there because the interrupt didn't work on the Alto, so you had to do polling. So we got this whole brain dead event loop, which got copied over into Windows and the Mac and everything else because no one ever said, well, look, you really don't need to do that polling. Because it was just there because the interrupt didn't work in the Alto, right? So, you know, instead of having like active objects and windows that you can just send messages to and have real object-oriented programming, you know, we even have like delegates in C#, so you can deal with all this horrible sort of leftovers from a MVC implementation, right? So one of the problems is you get people copying the past and instead of, I think, you know, many people say, oh, yeah, MVC is wonderful. Well, it's not wonderful. It's really too complicated. Right? Yeah,
but nobody seems to understand the C part. So
that's the worst bit of it, too.
just a comment on the encapsulation thing. One of the things we really wanted to do when we did IBM Smalltalk was actually hide all the GUI libraries and everything like that so people didn't have to see all the motif stuff and all the NV stuff and everything like that. But unfortunately, John Knight got on the forum and basically blasted IBM Smalltalk for not exposing enough source code, right? So before we could encapsulate it and sort of hide all this stuff so that people wouldn't get, you know, hit, they're just hearing, right? They're sitting there in this nice, simple system, and they touch the Envy button, and boom, boom, all the, you know, the cockpit appears and thousands of browsers and everything like that, and they're screaming as they've been thrown off the cliff, right?
I mean, and in many respects...
Alan Knight, you know, basically, you know, said, look, Park Place gives away more source code. You know, these nasty IBM guys are hiding all this stuff. So IBM marketing panicked. That's it.
So I can go back and blame Alan for all this.
Yeah, it's clearly Alan's fault for Java. I mean, it's Alan's fault Java and .NET exist the way they do.
I can only comment on the amount of source code that, and the way it was packaged with.
I mean, I have to say, as a visual aid user, I would certainly agree with your idea of never, ever showing any of the ABT stuff to anybody ever again.
I'm still scarred by it.
application builder technology is interesting.
And that was a really frustrating because we could not get the Smalltalk community to agree on namespaces. Everybody knew they were needed. I mean, Envy Developer had the notion of packages, but we couldn't get people to agree on namespaces. So this stuff, you know, there was no way to hide all this goop, much of which, of course, should be re-implemented. But then people start subclassing, you know, ABT and YYZ and all that other horrible stuff, and, you know, you get what you get.
Yeah. Well, I think we've probably taken as much of your time as we ought to take, Dave. It's going on an hour, so I wanted to thank you for coming on our little podcast.
Yes, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, thanks a lot. It's great to finally make it on. I appreciate it.
Oh, well, you know, most of our problems on this podcast stem from trying to get as many people as we can get onto the Skype line and then finding out how many interesting Skype artifacts we have to clean up later.
Very good. Thanks
all the
so
best
much,
to all of you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
And here's Dave Buck with the Cimbron Design Minute.
This is David Buck with today's Cimbron Design Minute. How many times have you run across an if or a while where you had to spend several minutes to figure out how the condition works? If and while conditions should be easy to read. There are several techniques we can use to make them readable. First, we can simply extract the condition into a separate method with a good name. This makes the if or while easier to read, but pushes the problem to another method. Extracting parts of the condition can also help. You may be able to use guard clauses. With guard clauses, you can exit the method early based on simpler conditions. Another thing you can do is use De Morgan's theorem. De Morgan's theorem states that an AND condition can be changed into an OR condition, and vice versa, by inverting the inputs and outputs. For example, if your condition is not A or B, you can change it into not A and not B. I usually find these positive conditions easier to understand. This has been the Cimbron Design Minute. Cimbron offers training and consulting in object-oriented languages and the Smalltalk programming language. For more information, visit www.cimbron.com or email info@cimbron.com.
And here's James Savage with this week's Smalltalk Jobs Report.
I'm James T. Savage, and this is the Smalltalk Jobs Report. Bruce O'Neill, our contributor in the EU, reports that in Zurich, Switzerland, SwissLinks AG is looking for an experienced senior technical developer who has experience with Oracle, SQL Server, Java or Smalltalk, and is fluent in English. They are also looking for the ability to speak French and German. Travel is necessary for this position. Sydney, Australia. Candle ICT and Praxis Technology Group have multiple positions open for senior analyst programmers to work on workflow systems. Experience that is considered a plus includes Oracle, PLSQL, Project Management, Smalltalk, TIBCO, Tower Software, Visual Basic, and .NET. This is a 6-month contract position. Juno Beach, Florida. Comsys and Florida Power and Light Company are looking for a Gemstone DBA who has experience with Gemstone, Smalltalk, Gem Builders for Smalltalk and Java, Gemstone Visual Stat Display, Unix, C Shell, Corn Shell, and they have excellent and should have excellent communication skills. Experience that is considered a plus includes Visual Basic, Visual Age, VisualWorks, Java, C, and WebSphere Application Server. San Jose, California. Robert Half Technology is looking for a software engineer who has experience with HTML, JavaScript, OOAD, SOAP, UML, WSDL, XML, XML Schema, XPath, and XSLT. Experience that is considered a plus includes Agile Software Development, Blaze Advisor, ClearCase, Eclipse, Oracle, TIBCO, Transportation Industry Experience, VisualWorks, and Web Services. This permanent position pays $90,000 to $120,000 per year and is probably at OOCL, like the Software Engineer Release Integration position I mentioned a few weeks ago. These are just a few examples of the Smalltalk positions that are currently open across the world. For more details, visit my blog, message sends with an undefined object. Good luck with your job hunting.
And that about wraps up industry misinterpretations for this week. We'll be back next week with a chat with Andre Schnoor about the work he's done on the Mac VM and for Cognitone in general on his music application. That should be really interesting, and we're recording that today. In any event, if you have feedback, please send it to smalltalkpodcasts@syncom.com. Head on over to the Facebook group, Industry Misinterpretations, or Podcast Alley and cast a vote, or iTunes and leave a review. Until next week, have fun with Small Talk.
Darling, I gotta talk to you about the things you've been putting me through now. I gotta talk to you, I gotta be explained.